Eating is an emotional experience, which is why managing your weight needs to be a psychological one. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, everybody, before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, if you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports and live for the short-term gratifications of DFS, then you have to try out Weekly Fantasy Sports WFS on Owner's Box. Head on over to rotoballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly Fantasy Sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged through live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner's Box will also be paying out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through their first ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. But that's not it. Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit of up to $500 for any depositors through January 4th. Just head on over to www.rotoballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your $500 bonus and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports. Now, to this episode of Benched with Bubba. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 353. I have a special guest joining me tonight. I got to know him over the PitchCon segment that we did together. It was myself and this gentleman and a couple other awesome guys in the fantasy industry talking about breakout players and how we viewed that. So go check that out on the Pitcher List YouTube page. If you want to go check that, see who we liked in that one. You can find his work at PitcherList.com, Bleacher Creature Yankees podcast, on Twitter at GreenfieldMax18. Max, how we doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, we're going to talk about a couple of those guys that we mentioned in that breakout panel, because one of them's having a pretty good spring.
Yes, 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 he is. I'm pretty sure I remember who you're talking about now, but a pretty darn good spring. So, yeah, that'll be a fun one to talk about. So it'll be interesting. We're going to talk some recent news like we always do on the show, some interesting players that when I set my outline a lot, I go and stalk the guest Twitter feed and I see who they like and who they're talking about. So I highlighted some names there. We're going to talk some spring training standouts, see where the day takes us. We got some good listener questions to talk about. Yes. But before we do all that, plug away everything you're doing. Let everybody know where they – I mentioned where they can find you, but talk a little more.
Yes. So my Twitter handle is at GreenfieldMax18. I'm currently a writer for Pitcher List. I have an article come out pretty much every week on Fridays. This week, we will get into the topic of what this week's article is in a bit. But, usually I'm writing mainly about pitching. That's most of my forte, and my knowledge is more in the pitching than the hitting realm. But I've been doing some hitting analysis. Last week, I did a couple players who could have bounced back years. I've just been kind of trying to find guys that I think people are maybe ignoring in fantasy drafts that I think could still have some value. It's definitely always dependent on the type of draft, of course, and what statistics you're using in your draft. But, I'm always trying to find the guy that, maybe people are sleeping on a little too much, or the next guy who's going to break out, which I think everyone's trying to do. But, there's so many very smart people that I learned from, in this industry, in this segment of the world of the fantasy baseball world. And I'm just trying to help anybody out that's willing to listen. I'm not going to get it right every time. I don't think anyone is. And if they are, as I said in the PitchCon, give me the lotto numbers, because you're clearly much better at this than I am. But I try to be as forthcoming and as thoughtful in my analysis as possible. And it's always just about what are people missing, or maybe something's so obvious that it's staring us all in the face and we just like don't want to believe it's true. And sometimes that needs to be said too.
Definitely. Yeah, the good and the bad. Like you said, you're trying to sugarcoat it, and not everything's all, you know, rainbows and sprinkles.
Sometimes the truth just is like, yeah, he's not very good.
Yep, I gotta accept it. And we've all been there. There's guys that we like to call our guys that we will buy into for way too many years, and then someone really just needs like smack you upside the head real quick and go, just stop. It's not there.
I think the collective agreement for that is that's Matthew Boyd for like the entirety of fantasy baseball Twitter. Is just like, I want Matthew Boyd to be so good. He throws one slider and you're like, yes. Then the next slider gets hit 500 feet and you're like, no.
Yeah, exactly. He is the definition of a roller coaster emotion, but it goes downhill way more than uphill.
So. I remember in 2019, when I worked at Sports Info Solutions, there was a Tigers fan there, and I was telling him in the first half of the year, I was like, I will be so happy, because I was a Yankees fan at the time. Now, I worked for the Nationals for a hot second, so now I'm kind of like a free agent for a team, per se, so I'm just trying to follow the game. But I was telling him when I was a Yankees fan, I was like, I would love to trade for Matt Boyd, like, you know, I don't care about the home run problem in Yankee Stadium. I think it'll work out fine. I think his like next three starts, he had like an ERA of 7. And he's like, you still want to trade for Boyd? And I was like, nah, I'm good.
That's awesome. What did you do for the Nationals, if you're allowed to talk about it?
I was going to be a minor league video intern for the 2020 season, but
it obviously did not happen.
No, it didn't happen. Then my affiliate got cut. The Hagerstown Suns are no more. They are now, I think they're an independent ball team now. I saw that they announced that they were going to fix the stadium up, which is nice, because that was the reason that they got cut, was their stadium wasn't very nice, apparently. But yeah, my affiliate got cut, so I can officially say now that I'm not being brought back by the Washington Nationals, which is all right. It's okay. I'm cooking up some other opportunities here in California.
I'll say where you're located, based on your Twitter profile. I grew up in Woodland, close by.
Oh, okay,
So I know where you are, and you definitely have some options there. Yes. Like you could head to Reno, you can go to Sacramento. There's San Jose. There's Fresno. Yeah. Like you've got options for sure.
There's definitely and there's a growing trend of baseball individual training facilities and stuff going out there. They're growing more. Driveline has definitely influenced. Which, by the way, speaking of Driveline, I feel like that's the best shape of your life is now the new version of that is he went to Driveline.
Exactly. Like, did he go to Driveline this week? Did he increase his spin at Driveline?
his fastball RPMs increased by 222 because he went to Driveline. Oh, okay. Does he throw more strikes? No.
Yep. That's so funny. It's so true. But he went to Driveline. We know what Driveline does. Yes. Thank you, Trevor Bauer. We figured it out. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, that's very, very true. It's the affiliates thing. I don't want to go down the big rabbit hole there, but it's depressing what they're doing in my
life. It's just so sad.
Like even like San Jose, where I used to go all the time. Now it's a low A team for the Giants, not the high A team. Yeah. So that's going to be weird. Fresno was, you know, the Giants AAA. Then
they were the
single
Nationals.
Now they're a single A team
for the Rockies. Right.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's like, they gutted the California League. They made this weird. I don't know what they're doing. Yeah. I really don't.
I mean, this is a topic for a different time, but the dissolvement of minor league baseball as we know it is just, it's depressing to watch.
It's very much so. It's very, very bad. But we'll move on to some other stuff. Might be kind of depressing because there's some injuries involved here, but we'll try to shine it up for you. We'll start with some recent news here. Hunter Harvey moved to the 60-day IL with his oblique injury. Part of that is so they could get Michael Franco on the 40-man roster. Yeah. Part of it's because it might be that bad of an injury. We'll stick with Hunter Harvey here at first. That opens the door. Tanner Scott's a very popular name. Cesar Valdez is a very popular name. Where are you headed if you're looking for a Baltimore reliever later in drafts?
I saw today, I think Tanner Scott, someone said that he hit 100 on the gun.
Ooh.
And so that's like, oh, okay. He was the first, like, when I saw the Harvey industry, Scott was the first guy I was thinking of. Because if the fastball, if he's got that velocity on it, he's definitely got the other metrics with it to make him a pretty good reliever. And the other thing is the Orioles have already shown that they're willing to use him. So my guess is, like, with the injury to Harvey, Scott's only going to see more opportunities now. So he would be probably the first guy I go to would just be, A, as I told you before, opportunity is like the biggest thing I'm looking for. Are they going to get the chance? And Tanner Scott's probably the reliever that's going to get the most chances now due to the injury. The bigger question with Harvey is we don't know if it's like a whole year thing. Yeah. You know, like the seriousness of the injury is extremely unknown, and that concerns me not just this year but long term of like, is this going to be a nagging thing? Because it's not just a straight up like, oh, he's getting Tommy John, you know, he'll be out for a year, come back sometime next year. We don't really know. Like, it could be Tommy John. I have no idea, but we're still waiting to figure that out.
Yeah, those oblique injuries, just any muscle type injuries, you have no clue. There's no set timetable for it. It was just weird because at first you're like, okay, he's got an oblique, he's going to be out a couple weeks. And then all of a sudden, 60 days, and it's like, okay, you made room for Mykel Franco, but if it's not that bad, he could have done that with someone else.
Yeah, that's why I'm always kind of like, when I saw the 60-day IL, I'm always like so hesitant of like, did they find an elbow injury too? Yeah. Like, is there something, which it's possible, like an oblique injury led to an elbow injury that's happened before. That's why I'm like super concerned of like, okay, is there more wrong than we're being led on, or is the oblique injury just that bad?
Yeah. For reals, it's gonna be an interesting thing to follow and say 45 days when he should be starting his rehab pretty soon or something, and see where that one's coming along for sure.
He'll throw one slider and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey.
Yep, exactly. James, are you available? We need a consultant, James, Mr. Andrews. But we'll see how that goes. Let's go to another injury. Ketel Marte hit a almost 460-foot bomb on Tuesday and then proceeded to run the bases and hurt his ankle. Reports are it's not bad. This is, of course, spring training, so we don't know. What level of concern, I guess, do you have with Ketel Marte right now?
Minimal. I mean, when I saw him come out of the game, I was worried because, that's a guy I forgot to mention in my article about bounce back candidates. But Ketel Marte, I mean, he broke out huge in 2019. And, you know, I think people just didn't notice how, maybe in the fantasy circles they were giving him his praise, but the average fan did not notice how good Ketel Marte was in 2019. He was a beast. So his 2020, he struggled, and then in spring training, he's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting it in the air. Both things he wasn't really doing super consistently last year. So I was like, okay, clearly he fixed what was ever wrong with his swing. But he is a guy who relies on his speed a bit, especially, you know, if he's going to be playing. I think he's slotted into what? Is he still slotted in for center field there?
Yeah, they have him in the outfield for now,
Yeah, so then he's going to need his speed out there because Chase Field, that is a large outfield. So his ankle injury is concerning because I'm concerned for the re-aggravation of it in that outfield where he's going to have to cover so much ground. And it also could dampen his value if he might not be stealing as many bases as he possibly could. But it's a little concerning. You know, I'm sure he'll be back in games and we'll have to see how he's moving around and everything. But if the Diamondbacks say it's not too big of a deal, I'll take them at their word. But, in coming off the 2020 season to the 2021, every little thing, you just have no idea how legitimate it's going to be because their training just completely different. Last year was such a short sprint. They could just do things a little bit differently, go all out a little bit more because they know they don't have to play too many games. But now an ankle injury, you're like, okay, we give this more time. I'm sure if it were the regular season he might be playing through it, but it's better that he's not.
Yeah, it's kind of what it seemed like with all the reports afterwards. Just one of those, he could have gotten taped up or something in between innings and gone for it if he needed to. I'm glad they didn't, because I've been buying a lot of like eighth and ninth round shares of Ketel Marte, and
that's a good spot.
There was a part of me going, oh, no, I know, I'm with you. I'm a believer in the bounce back candidate part, but then if you can't play, it's hard to bounce back. So that was like, don't do it to me.
Again, if he can't steal bases, he's a good hitter. Not going to deny that, but his value sort of goes way down because he's a perennial 20 to 30 stolen base threat. But if he's only going to be attempting, 5 to 10 times, all of a sudden, instead of taking him in the eighth, ninth round, which is a really good spot for him, you're kind of like, okay, I can probably wait, 3, 4, maybe even 5 more rounds on him, because if he's only going to be stealing 5 more bases, there's a bunch of other guys available in those rounds who are just as good hitters.
Yeah, if you want a second baseman that's got more power potentially, he will have a lower average. You wait a few rounds to get Mike Moustakas or something to play second base if you really want to, because then, like you said, the steals kind of negate themselves and it makes it not as appealing for sure. And then it also becomes a discussion. Two bounce back guys that are going right next to each other, you have Marte and Altuve, seem to be going pretty close at second base. Like, they're kind of the ones that go back to back for the most part. So then it's like you take Marte thinking potential more power, still brings you the steals. If he doesn't steal, well, now you're starting to make these entries because Altuve should steal a little more, but yeah, not have the power. So it's what does your team need at that point?
It's also a question of like Altuve. I remember if we looked at the full season, including postseason, Altuve was much better at the plate if we include the postseason, right? But now here in spring training, he seems to be flailing at everything again. Like the difference was in the postseason was he was a little bit more contained. He wasn't, you know, getting out of the zone too much, but in spring training, he's just been kind of swinging a lot again. He already swings a lot. That's who he is. But it's a little like concerning that he's doing, you know, it's spring training, right? We always take things with a grain of salt, but I always look for, you know, all right, what were they good at? Were they good with their plate discipline, hitting the ball hard, right? Are they doing that again in spring training? And if they aren't, why? And if they aren't, is that concerning? And with Altuve, it's a little concerning that he's, again, kind of like coming out of his approach a bit.
Yeah, it's definitely something to monitor because both of those guys, I like where they're getting drafted, but it's they still need to produce in the end. Stephen Strasburg, we're always, unfortunately, it seems like he hits a bump on the road at some point in time. It's terrifying because it's like the talent level's great. If you're good with 150 to 170 quality innings, he's there. But don't expect a whole lot more. He already has a calf injury. And then there's two things that came out of this. They said it's minor, which is good. He said he's a quick healer, which made me laugh. I haven't been able to pull the string on Strasburg. What are you doing with Strasburg in drafts right now?
I think I saw somebody tell me like they were taking him in the late teens, early 20 rounds. And I was like,
what draft is that?
Well, they had a lot. They had a lot of teams in their draft.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, and I was like, that seems kind of heavy. But I would avoid it drafting Strasburg. There's no question in my mind in a single season that he could be a top 10 pitcher. I mean, when he gets to pitch, there's no, as you said, there's no doubting the talent. But yeah, I mean, we saw what he did in 2019, right? That was by far one of the best years of his career.
Yep.
But, you know, the calf injury, thank God it's not an arm injury, right?
This is
the first time he's having a lower half injury, which does, you know, make it slightly better. But even coming into the year, I was telling people, like, I would rather avoid Strasburg. There are just sure bets. There are things that are just safer. You know, if you're somebody who's, like, really high, like, likes risk, which, good for you. You're braver than I. But then, you know, maybe in your later rounds and like, you know, you're getting into the, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth, right? You're like, I need somebody that could, you know, I need a good risk buy. Strasburg could be that. Like if this is nothing, I mean, I take his, you know, his fast healing comments, maybe he meant them sarcastically.
I hope so.
But he was a bit of a joker when I met him last year. So,
nice.
But yeah, I'm avoiding him is what I'm avoiding guys like Strasburg, Severino, Sale, Syndergaard, pretty much any pitcher that's coming back from injury. I'm tending to avoid.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And it seems like you look at Strasburg just ADP in March from NFBC anywhere from pick 48 to pick 97. So
yeah,
it's all over the board. It just depends on where you're feeling frisky, basically. Like you're saying,
if you are risk averse, you're definitely not taking him at all.
No, but that's why I don't do it. It's just not going to happen.
If he ends up pitching great, you're like, okay, I whiffed. Yep. Like, it's all right.
Yeah, I'll take those chances. That's one of those that, like, it feels like at least like 80% of the time you're going to be right. So just kind of walk away and see what happens.
Especially when you get guys like, you know, Herman Marquez are usually available in the same roughly ADP that Strasburg is. Marquez is a much safer bet. A much safer bet than Stephen Strasburg, because Marquez has consistently put out like 180 innings.
Yep.
I know that starting pitchers, we might get one or two that throw 200 innings this year, but Marquez is going to be one of those guys who, like, we think about that's going to be pushing that number because he's just remained so durable and he's a good pitcher. But they're at roughly similar ADPs, and I've seen more people like talk about Strasburg than Marquez, and I'm like, take Marquez. You know what you're getting.
Yeah, because everyone's just nervous about Coors, but I've talked about it on other shows. If you break down, I know it was a short season last year, but it was essentially one, you could say maybe two starts that destroyed him in Coors. he had like five really good starts in Coors where you'd have been mad you didn't play him. And two, like the one or two starts, one I believe was the Padres where you probably would have sat him anyways. And there was one, I think it was it wasn't the Dodgers, but it was another game where you're kind of like 50-50 on it.
I think it was the Giants. And the Giants,
the Astros. Won. The Astros got him.
Was it the Astros?
Yeah.
The Giants are interesting because I remember in 2019, I think Marquez got absolutely shelled against the Giants in Coors Field. And again, I think Marquez is worth it because, listen, you're going to get those games where in Coors he's just – it just happens, right? Because it happens to every pitcher there.
Yep.
So you just kind of got to live with that. But as you said, you're going to get like more good starts than like awful starts than Marquez at a Coors. And then when he's on the road, he's just as good.
Golden.
So –
I'm with you. I've been slowly buying back in because he's finally got a price that's worth discussing. And
I also think he's getting traded at some point this year.
Agreed.
If the Rockies finally understand that they are rebuilding and that sending $50 million to a team was ridiculous. But also, if you if that's the direction you're going, just trade Marquez, trade Story, trade John Gray. Get everyone who's good out of that team.
Yep, pretty much. So, given $50 million to get rid of
that was crazy. I'm sorry, but that was just when I saw that I almost broke my.
Their GM should lose their job.
Jeff Rittich is
horrible.
That was horrible.
Yeah, Sonny Gray. He has skipped a start. Apparently dealing with back spasms. Back injuries are not fun to play with because those come pop up at any moment. Apparently, he was dealing with them at times towards the end of last year. I mean, really find out about it. But that makes me even worse, more concerned now because he's already had it and it's popping up again. This is a guy I was kind of interested in drafts, and now I'm much more hesitant. If you were drafting soon, how would you approach Sonny Gray?
Back injuries scare me a lot. Yeah. As someone who has had back injuries, they are not fun to deal with. Extremely not fun, and they are almost impossible to even like. If you're like, I can pitch through it, no, you can't. You just can't. Sonny Gray, it looked like last year he labored through the end of the year because, I mean, open the year, he was brilliant. Like, he looked great. A lot of strikeouts, a lot of ground balls, very minimal walks, very minimal hits. And then his last, like, three or four starts, he was getting a little roughed around, and the pitch mix was weird. It looked like he was – just didn't look right. So if he was having back problems at the end of the year, I would believe it. But – yeah, I mean, that would make me back problems on a pitcher like Strasburg. I'm out. Like, not because that's the kind of thing that definitely lingers. Yeah, it's hard for that to go away soon. I mean, it took just from personal speaking, it took 6 months to recover from a fractured back for me. I don't think that's what he has. I pray to God that's not what he has because that would be terrible. But like, it can start with just a couple back spasms, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's 3 months you've been on the IL because your back is still bothering you. Mm-hmm. Back stuff is scary. Like, if you have Sonny Gray shares, I'm sorry, but you should probably be selling them right now.
Yeah, no, I'm probably not going to draft anymore. That's for sure. And I've had lower back deals before, some worse than others. And when it's been bad, it was like 4 to 6 weeks before I could like say go play golf again. So I can only imagine a guy trying to go pitch. It's going to be, I don't know, kind of scary. Something to monitor for sure. San Diego Padres, Austin Nola fractured his finger on his catching hand, his left hand. Not good when you're trying to catch 90-plus mile an hour fastballs over and over again. Like, Realmuto was non-catching hand. He's still been kind of working with pitchers. You can say what you want there. Nola, this is going to set him back quite a bit.
I
moved him down my rankings quite a bit. I was trying to focus on drafting him at certain parts anymore. That's kind of tough to do. So, A, what's your thoughts on Nola? And B, is a guy like Caratini all of a sudden on your radar?
I'm very sad about Austin Nola. He was my second article at Pitcher List was all about Austin Nola because I know most leagues don't do defense, but if you do, Austin Nola was an amazing defender behind the plate last year. And that's where a lot of value comes from catching. And the better defend you are, the more you're going to play, which is, as I said, opportunities are big. And he is a great defender last year, and his stance is great. His technique is great. But he was a good hitter, too. He was hitting the ball consistently hard and trying to hit it in the air as much. Then he got to San Diego, and I think the meshing with the new staff and learning everything, his bat definitely took a little bit of a tumble. But it was still solid enough, especially out of the catcher spot. I told people coming into the year that like he should be in your top 10, you know, fantasy catcher rankings. This injury, like, yes, it's on his catching hand, which means it's important. You know, it's going to take a while. He needs to let it heal. So that'll bump him down a bit. I don't remember what his ADP was, but I would, whatever it is, probably add 10 to 15 to it. And Victor Caratini moves up because, hey, Victor Caratini is pretty good. Like, yeah, he's probably like closer to a slightly above average hitting catcher, but like Nola, he's pretty good defensively, which means again, he's going to play, you know, the MLB teams that offense from the catching spot is nice, but they generally just want to make sure that you're a solid defender back there. And you already knew Caratini was going to catch every Darvish start because mm-hmm. that's what he did in Chicago. So now, you know, he's going to work with the entire staff. I would move up on Caratini. I don't think there's, especially in a one season deal, there's not really much alarming there. He's a slightly above average catcher. And, you know, unless you're taking Grandal and Real Muto, which most people don't because they have the strategy of buying catchers late, which is fair because there's not a lot of good ones. But Caratini is one of those good ones that I'm cautiously optimistic that Nola can recover within a couple months. But I would be all over Victor Caratini.
Yeah, a couple of things. Nola's current ADP, it's 190 for the month of March, but since his injury, he's gone as low as 311. So that tells you everything you need to know there. But Caratini, I love Caratini. I talked about him a lot last year because with the DH involved, you know, he's going to play first base, DH, and catch in Chicago. He played quite a bit. He's got a good stick. He hits the ball hard. Good plate discipline, actually, for a
very
catcher.
Very good plate discipline.
So he'll get you if you're like in OBP leagues or whatever. Like, he's big in that. He's sneaky. Right now, his ADP is 360. That's going to creep up a lot, like you said.
It's gonna, that's going to shoot up real high.
He should be like a top – I'll say top 20 for now, catcher. But I could see an argument for 10 to 15 if you want.
Yeah.
Like, I really could.
If he's like the 13th catcher coming off the board, I would say that you might have done a really good job. Like, you might have gotten a steal.
Yeah, because like at that point, you know, the 13th catcher right now is Garver. Then you have Posey, Alfaro. I'd have no problem having a conversation saying Caratini could be better than them.
Yeah, right. Like, especially, you know, Posey, he didn't play last year there, and his power was completely sapped in 2019, and so you have no idea what you're going to get out of him. I mean, again, he's still a whiz behind the plate, still very good. But if he's, you know, he's not going to be putting up a great batting average. It's going to be good, not great. Not a lot of power, not a lot of RBIs. You know, his OBP is probably going to be solid. So if you're in an OBP league, right, he'll shoot up a bit because he's always had pretty good plate discipline. But yeah, if you're telling me that you're taking Victor Caratini over Buster Posey, I would probably say that there's a really good argument for that, which hurts because I love Buster Posey.
Yeah, so do I. I'm a Giants fan here, so it's like he's done so much for that team and everything. But
yeah, it hurts to say that you're taking Victor Caratini over Buster Posey, but like there's a good argument for it.
Well, like when we've done catcher previews and stuff, this is the first year I've even had the chance to roster Buster Posey because I've never paid the premium for him, which he always had to pay for because I didn't, you know, he's not that good fantasy wise. He's not.
He always went way higher in fantasy drafts than he should have. But that's just like, that's most catchers in general.
Yeah, right? I agree.
Like, I saw somebody told me that Yasmani Grandal went in like the first 25 picks of a draft. And I was like, well, was it an OBP league? And I was thinking, like, yeah, if it's an OBP league, you know, he's consistently 360 on base percentage, right? Like, makes sense. That's a really good OBP for a catcher. They're like, no, standard 5x5. And I was like, ooh, Grandal's not a good fantasy.
Not that. No, he gets like 235.
Yeah, like, he'll hit 235. He'll give you 25 home runs, right? Like, he can hit bombs, but.
You can do that later.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you. Some drafts make you laugh. Back to Baltimore real quick. We hit on Michael Franco earlier.
Yeah.
They signed him to a deal. You know, he might not start out the gate, but I imagine him being the everyday third baseman at one point in time. Ryan Ruiz is there, but let's be real. Yeah. If Franco's hitting like he hit in Kansas City, that's your guy. He's cheap in drafts right now. That'll go up a little bit, but any appeal on Franco? I'm a big fan of Franco, and I think it's a fun landing spot in that ballpark on that team. I think he can still be pretty productive.
Yeah, so Michael Franco, for years, I mean years, I've literally just said, man, if that guy ever put it together. Right?
He did in spring training every year.
And he did. Every single damn year. I was always like, man, is this going to be the year of Michael Franco? Then the first 2 weeks, he was like 1-for-18. And I was like, never mind.
Not again.
But, you know, his ADP right now is 538, which that'll shoot up now that, you know, he's been drafted, right? So, I want him to be good so bad, because you look at the swing, you look at the exit velos, you look at his hard hit rate, and you're like, it's all there. Yep. It's all there. But his problem is he just loves to swing.
Yep.
Which is fine. Like, some of those guys can be really productive. And at times, Franco looks like one of the best. I mean, I think it was 2018 where there was like a month stretch where Michael Franco was like the second best hitter in the league over like a month period. And I remember like telling my friends, I was like, what the heck has got into Michael Franco? But he has the potential to be a great hitter. He just gets in his own way because he's just so free swinging. Yep. And if someone can teach that man to just like, hey, instead of swinging at everything that looks like a strike, why don't we swing at like half of the things that look like a strike, and then he'd be so much better. I know it sounds so simple, like, hey, be more plate disciplined. Like, yeah, obviously, you know, I can sit here and say that behind a you know laptop screen and everything, right? But, you know, it's much harder to go out and do it. But that's really I don't like guys who have bad plate discipline, but when they hit the ball as hard as he does, I'm always like inclined to be like, but
I'm with you.
But there's a chance he could do it. And I like Franco. I like him. As you said, I like him in that park. I mean, he could feast in that park. The problem is, like, he's burned so many people so many times that I would still tell people, like, be cautiously optimistic, but I would avoid it just because been burned so many times. But I do love him in that park, though.
Yeah. And I think it's fun. It's like, people just need to temper their expectations, because I'm with you. I think he can be super, super good. But you just look at his profile, he's hit 278, 234, 270, 230, 255. So which one are you going to get? But through all that, 17 homers, 22, 24, 25. So he can get you 20 to 25 homers, you would imagine. And it's crazy to think, for a guy that hits it as hard as he does, his BABIP's always below 300, and he strikes out like 15% of the time for the most part. So he doesn't strike out a ton. He just like pops it up, or he does he's such a freakish guy. It's goofy, like you said. It's just wild.
Alex Chamberlain and Connor Cochran, they talked about him a lot, and that his launch angle has so much variations in it because he just swings so much. His approach is to, I just got to get the bat on the ball.
Yeah.
Right. And he's not really the type of hitter that that should be doing that. You know, it's one thing if a David Fletcher or an Adam Frazier or an Andrelton Simmons do that, right? Because they don't have a ton of power. Right, they're not selling out for power and everything. But Franco, he's got the pop. I mean, he's hit 20 to 25 home runs a year, as we said, with this approach. If he changed it, I mean, we could be seeing a guy that could potentially hit 30 home runs. In that ballpark, he could really do it. But again, I just don't think he's going to change his approach, and it's just going to be, you know, he'll hit 250 to 260 with the 20 home runs, and you're going to be like, this is nice.
Yep.
God, I know there's more in there.
Yep, there's so much more. But I think where he's getting drafted, if you can get him cheap, corner infield, bench guy, see what happens, give it a shot. I think it's one of the better spots. I was worried he's going to go to the Mets or something and just screw it all up. But I think in Baltimore, he at least gets a chance.
I wouldn't even be able to figure out the Mets. I'd be like, what are they doing? I don't even know what they're doing with Dom Smith. So
yeah, they don't know what they're doing. So it's entertaining there. We're going to skip Lubob because Lubob actually came back and played on Wednesday. So that's good. Things are positive there. Carlos Carrasco, though, this is one that I knew it when they said it. He's dealing with, you know, elbow issues again. I remember him dealing with this before in the preseason, in the spring training, and you're getting nervous. Then he goes out and he throws 170 plus innings. Like, he does it, but eventually he's an older pitcher. Yeah. And this, I guess he could go Masahiro Tanaka, and I always waited for the surgery, and it never happened. He just kept doing it time and time again, even with a splitter, which is crazy. Carrasco's going around pick 75. I'm too nervous to draft him. What's your outlook or thoughts on Carlos Carrasco and this injury right now?
Yeah, so I remember when it happened, he was like, it'll be okay. It's a minor thing. But it's always like, yeah, but, you know, he's – how old is he now? He's 34, right? His ADP is 64. That's a little high if it were me. If it were no injury, I'd say, yeah, that's a
Great, I was all about it before the injury happened.
Like 64 for Carlos Carrasco. I mean, you're getting a guy who's arguably close to a top 10 pitcher at 64. Like, that's a really good get. But with the elbow stuff, yeah, you're right. He, I think last year they shut him down for like a week or so with the same sort of like elbow issues. And he, I guess he pitched a sim game and they reported no issues. But it's just, you're walking this thin line. Yep. 64 is definitely way too high. But if you're getting into the 110s and 120s and he's still there, I'd say you could do that. You know, we talked about with Strasburg, like that's you know, a different thing. Yeah. Carrasco, I mean, he missed time because he had cancer, not because he was hurt, right?
A little different,
right? He's routinely been pretty durable as a pitcher. So I think it's, I'm a little bit more inclined to go for Carrasco in the 110s, but you know, if for whatever reason he's in like the 130s or 140s, if like people are really just like that nervous about it, then I'd be like, oh yeah, sure, go ahead. Like that's way below what he should be going at. So if you're in the 110s, 120s, I'd say you could be a little bold and go for it. But just definitely like this next week, I think he's supposed to pitch again, either another start or another sim game. I can't remember what I read, but you know, see how that goes, and then from there make adjustments. But this next appearance, that'll be key, because if he gets shut down again, then that ADP is going to plummet.
Yeah, it's going to get real interesting with Carrasco. I hope he's okay, because I, A, root for him, and B, I want him to be on my fantasy team. I'm nervous, very nervous at that point in time.
He's an easy guy to root for, and he's been routinely very productive.
Yeah, very productive. And in a year where innings are a concern, he goes out and throws innings. And at his age, on a team like the Mets, they have no reason not to throw him as many innings as he can go. So, yeah, very excited about that potential, but we'll see how that plays out. Last bit of news I have here. Eugenio Suarez and the Reds are sweeping the fantasy industry right now by just so much excitement. They had him play shortstop. Apparently, he's been practicing on the backfield at shortstop this whole preseason, spring training. And they wanted, and they pretty much are going to use him at shortstop to start the season. And now this is where it gets funny. They're going to move Moose back to third, potentially use Jonathan India at second, which I thought, why don't you just leave India at third, where he came out of college 2 years ago, and keep Moose at second. But I'm not the manager. I thought maybe bring Nick Senzel into the infield, but that's not happening because Shobo Akiyama is on the IL. So all kinds of moving parts in Cincinnati. What's your thoughts on this from a fantasy perspective? Is there like, you know, you're going to get new eligibility from Suarez? That's cool. Maybe Jonathan India gets a shot. Any thoughts on this?
Well, I can tell you very confidently that the Reds should have gotten a goddamn shortstop on the open market.
There was a few more available too.
There were a few. I thought for sure that Andrelton Simmons
would have made too much sense.
He was going to end up in Cincinnati. Like, I was so confident that's where he was going to go once the Yankees had re-signed DJ LeMahieu. I was like, yeah, all right, he'll go. He'll go to Cincinnati. He'll take that 1 year deal, do whatever they want. And then all of a sudden, like, Simmons is gone. Gregorius is gone. I'm thinking to myself, well, VR, and then VR signs with the Mets, and I'm like, is there? What are they doing? And apparently the answer is to take a guy who was horrible at shortstop early in his career and move him back there. Yep. Then take the guy who is a career third baseman in his development and move him to second base. And then take Moustakas, who's roughly the same at both spots. He's like solid, could be a little below average, could be a little above average. But, you know, he's fairly okay at second or third. It doesn't make too much sense. But when you have a guy who's like a career third baseman throughout most of his baseball life playing there, doesn't make much sense to swap him.
No.
Then when they said that, I was like, well, you know, Nick Senzel was a second baseman. You know, he was an infielder. And then I saw the Akiyama injury, and I was like, well, never mind about that. And all that it makes me come back to is two things. For real life purposes and real baseball, the Reds management had no idea what they're doing. And then the other thing to me is Eugenio Suarez at shortstop is probably roughly the same value as he was at third base. He's going off in like the top 10, late top 10 at third base. Right. If he moves over shortstop, that's probably where he is too. Like, though you're going to get a lot more home runs, which could increase the value. It just, the thing about shortstop is like, it's so stacked.
Yep.
It's so, especially if Javier Baez is back to hitting. Yeah, I mean, I would understand if people took Suarez in front of Baez, but in my mind, there's a real chance that Baez is going to be, you know, more productive than Suarez is. It's slim, but there's a possibility of that. You know, he did hit a ball 116 miles per hour last year, and he's crushing baseballs again so far in spring. That in-game video clearly means helping a lot to Javier Baez. I can't explain it, but him and JD Martinez, like,
it's coming.
It means something to them. But, you know, Suarez, he's good value for a shortstop. Like, that's going to help his ADP because he probably goes from, you know, a late top 10 third baseman to a late top 10, top 7, top 6 shortstop because he's going to hit 30 to 40 home runs. Like, that's what he does, you know, and that's really valuable out of that shortstop spot.
Yeah, when I was breaking it down and like I was taking notes and like for a little like blurb I was gonna post with Suarez, you know, 35 home runs is pretty much a yearly thing. He has 40 plus home run upside. So you go to like the projection sites like on Fangraphs, just look at say the bat. You have Tatis projected at 36, Seager projected at 31. Those are the only two shortstops to hit over 30. So yeah, Suarez could just smack both of those.
Yeah,
obviously, he could. Average stinks. Stolen base stinks, but yeah.
You're shelling out for home runs there.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah. It just depends on what your roster construction is. I think the biggest thing he brings is now instead of being third base, corner infield, it's third base, middle infield, shortstop. So that whole flexibility thing, which we saw was be so important last year, that becomes a little more entertaining. Like the whole argument, like given DJ LeMay, who hits for average and stuff, isn't for power. The reason why he gets drafted so high is all that flexibility he has.
Yeah.
First now you get a guy like Suarez to get that. It's just like,
it's interesting. Positional flexibility, if that helps, for sure. That makes his ADP go up just on that alone. Yeah. Adding the fact that he could hit more home runs than any other shortstop. Also 31 home runs for Corey Seager seems a little low. He's crushing the ball,
destroying
the baseball. But I get it. Like, you know, Lindor, his bat is it. He struggled early, and then as 2020 went on, it got better. But in 2019, like
it was good, not great. Yeah.
Like, you definitely know he's capable of more. Xander Bogaerts is obviously like he can just mash out of the shortstop hole. I don't know how much longer he's going to be a shortstop because if he's going to play there for his entire career, he's going to like double Derek Jeter's negative defensive run save. That guy is atrocious out there at short, but.
It'll be a fun debate. Who has the worst defensive WAR, Suarez or Bogaerts this year?
Oh,
shortstop.
God, that's mean, but very true. That's tough. I'd probably take Bogaerts.
Yeah,
I would. Yeah. I would bet Bogaerts is worse. That's really saying something.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's going to be interesting to see. I'm curious. I'm curious to see how this plays out. I'm curious to see how long they stick with it. Does it give India full time, or do they send them back down eventually? Like. There's so many what ifs that India, I'm intrigued by. Like, he's shown a little bit of promise in the minors, not what we saw in college, but it looks like he did something at the alt site last year that we didn't see because he's come out hitting really well this spring, like really well. So
I would love for them to just give the Reds are interesting because I would love to give anybody that's like an infielder in their farm just a shot. Just because, like, what he didn't sign a shortstop, right?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's got to be able to play it. I know you're going with Suarez, who has shown that he can't play it.
Exactly.
But what's the harm? What's the harm of throwing him out there? Like if obviously he didn't prep for it, that's one thing. Like if he's not prepared to play shortstop, sure, that's fine. But if he was like, hey, you know, like I took ground balls at shortstop in the offseason. I've been taking them here in the backfields and everything. I would rather see him there and keep Suarez at third because. Mm. Hey, you know what you're getting from Suarez at third, and you can get relative upside at short from him. And it's just,
it's weird. It's very
Reds,
weird.
The Reds management, it confuses me. I don't get it, man. I don't get
Reds,
it.
Reds or Rockies management? That's the question.
Definitely taking the Reds because I will never take the Rockies management in anything.
Exactly. But that'll wrap up our recent news. Let's go to some players that you've been. Talking about Lee later, showing some interest in that I'm curious about. But before we do that, you mentioned you kind of do a sleeper column, breakout column, like you do these kind of things. You did some earlier this year. Just out of curiosity, because like we all do them, how do you decide who your sleeper is? Because the discussion on the fantasy world these days, and it's tough because we have to put content out. That's just the way it goes, regardless. With so much content out there, is a player really a sleeper anymore?
That is okay. I'm glad you said that, because that is what I face too. I'm like, you know, this guy, his ADP is, you know, 212, but really he should be going in the 180s. And then I look and there's three articles about how he should be drafted higher. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. I can't say that. Three people have already said this. So the first step is always like, I look at their ADP and I'm like, they should be going higher than that. Right. That's always my first step. But then the problem nowadays is like, everyone seems to be thinking the same thing of like, he's going too low. You know, like, I was thinking about, you know, when we did our breakout picks and everything, you know, I was obviously Jordan Montgomery, who we'll talk about more later, but like he's going, you know, his ADP, I was like, that's way too low for Jordan Montgomery. But then the next thing you know, now everyone's like, it's Jordan Montgomery time. And I'm like, good thing I got ahead of that one, because man, if I was trying to catch up now, I mean, there's Jordan Montgomery's articles like twice a week now. He's all over the place, which is great. I'm glad, because I love the guy. But I mean, it's, if you're not catching it early, oh man, it's so hard. It's so hard. At this point, I'm just sort of like, I'm just going to write about the guys that I know are probably undervalued that other people are talking about anyway, but I'm still going to write about them.
Yeah, that's all you can do. Just put your twist on it. Maybe it's different. Maybe it's not. Maybe someone sees it that didn't see the other one. You just got to go with it now, because there's so much of it. Sometimes I write the article and I say late round targets.
Yeah.
You do with it what you wish.
That's what I say. In the article, I'm like, he's a good late round target. Or if you're looking for a mid round starting pitcher, right? That's what I say. I don't, because I know that it's like, all right, their ADP is, you know, 152.
It's tough. I wrote it down when you mentioned it. I just had to ask, because it's like, there's so much, and it's a lot of good content out there. Yeah, so it's not like it's,
these people
it's
are just saying like great things.
Yeah, so it's so tough being like, okay, how can I reinvent the wheel? And it's just like,
you run out of ways to do it.
Exactly. So let's talk about some guys though. Gleyber Torres, that's your article coming out on Friday. This is a guy that I was anti-Torres last year, more so because of his price tag. He was going very, very high in drafts, and I'm like, I'm not paying for that. Well, you never want a victory lap, something like that, but he had a down season, so it worked out for me. But then I look at where he's getting drafted now, and I'm all in on Javi Baez, but he's going right by Javi Baez, and I'm slowly then shifting to Gleyber Torres in this one, thinking, okay, like if I just put steals to the side, because who knows if Baez will still run, Torres has more power, potentially more average, better team. Like everything points to Gleyber Torres. So what is it that you're seeing that's coming out in your article on Friday?
So the big thing I'm focused on with his offensive profile was Gleyber Torres had a 12% walk rate last year, which caught a lot of people off guard, because he was routinely like a 9-8% walk rate. That's fine, like especially for the type of hitter that Torres is, that's relatively what one would expect, a high, you know, a decent contact kind of guy, 270 to 290 hitter, right? But then he debuted this, you know, this 12% walk rate, a 17% strikeout rate, both a career high and a career low, you know, in the respective categories, and I said, what happened there? And on the surface, it looks like he just swung less. And like, yeah, if you swing less, generally speaking, you might walk more. But it's not really that simple. His season was sort of in three phases. He had his pre-August 8th phase, where he was just absolutely terrible. I think at one point in time, he was like 0 for 23, not just in hits, but like he just didn't get on base in that stretch too. And then post-August 8th to injury, that's where Gleyber Torres really started to figure it out. His outside swing percentage of the zone, I think, was below 20%. So he was just not chasing anything. Then his swing percentage was much lower than that too. It was really low. Like 15-20% below average. So he wasn't swinging in general, but he still, over that stretch, he had a 164 weighted runs created plus. So he was mashing the ball. Then we look at, you know, post-injury, postseason, right, in that third phase, that's the Gleyber Torres that people know is there. That's sort of, he had like a 150 weighted runs created stretch, weighted runs created plus over that stretch. His O swing percentage went up a little bit. His walk rate was still around 10-11% during that time though. And his swing percentage went back closer to league average. So he was swinging a the amount that one would expect, but he wasn't chasing as much. So that's the thing that caught my eye offensively was, if that's the Gleyber Torres that now has the ability that he has shown in the postseason consistently, that he can lay off tough pitches in the postseason. He doesn't do it over a full season, but come playoffs every time, he's a very hard man to get out. And he's now sort of transferring that ability into the regular season. And that was the thing that caught my eye. I know the power wasn't there last year, but you know, he came into camp out of shape. It clearly showed, you know, once, you know, he had that second phase, third phase came around, the power sort of came back and he looked much better. But offensively, that's what I'm focused on. Defensively, what the rest of the article is sort of talking about is his long-term viability at shortstop. Because he struggled defensively last year. Like, there's just no question about it. And the Yankees sort of had to wrestle with themselves. They clearly wanted to bring DJ LeMahieu back, but there was a lot of pressure to sign an Andrelton Simmons, who is as we all know, an immaculate defender, one of the best we've ever seen at that position, and move Gleyber back to second and see how he did there. That question has not gone away just because they signed DJ LeMahieu. That question is still there about his long-term viability at shortstop. And this is sort of the article sort of talking about, is this a make it or break it year for Gleyber Torres? Not offensively speaking. I think the offense is going to be there if that chase rate or that O-swing percentage that I was talking about is consistent with last year, because I think he'll have a monster year at the plate if that's true. If not, then he'll probably be close to the 270, 340, 480 to 500 range that he has been in his career, which is still really good value out of a shortstop. But if he can't field the ball, what's his long-term viability there? And then how does that affect Gio Urshela? How does that affect Luke Voit? Right? Because if Gleyber Torres can't play shortstop and, you know, all of a sudden Corey Seager's out there on the market, who's a good defender, you know, not a great defender, good defender at short, obviously a great hitter, left-handed.
Put that porch, yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, like all of a sudden the Yankees are more inclined to go get a shortstop. That affects Gleyber Torres' draft value out of, you know, shortstop versus second base or even third base, depending on where they move him, right? And it also affects, you know, the Yankees, you know, some guys like Luke Voit or Gio Urshela, if they're the odd man out, also we have to think about, you know, their value and everything. But yeah, I mean, the article is about sort of his offensive profile, what stood out in 2020, and then just his future at shortstop.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, because the twist about the future at shortstop is interesting, because when it comes to the offensive side of it, I saw the things you were talking about, you're swinging less and doing those things. That's like the easy way to look at it, like you mentioned. I remember there was one episode of MLB Tonight, DeRosa was on there with Billy Ripken or something, and they broke down his swing about his aggressiveness, kind of what you were talking about. And he started out the year kind of being timid and doing things like not the normal Gleyber Torres that they showed from the previous postseason and everything. And then you saw the development of he kind of switched back, as you mentioned, as the season went on. So that was very interesting to see, and can he hold that over? But I like the comments about how sustainable his future is at shortstop, because – A, if you put him over at third base, now that changes things a little bit. Like, is he as valuable? He's still valuable, but is he as valuable if he's not having a big season? And the other question is, I know it's probably not like a long-term thing, like the Reds putting Suarez at shortstop, but they've been toying with Urshela at shortstop this spring training. How much viability do you think that is? Because I think I like Urshela as a later round third baseman, corner infield for batting average and everything. But you throw shortstop into the mix, it just deepens that pool for the later round shortstops for sure. But do you think there's a chance they actually kind of roll with that more often than not?
They said their comments were that it was in a pinch, and Gio Urshela's ADP is 154, and that's a pretty good ADP for Gio Urshela. That's a potential sleeper. I need to go write about Gio Urshela. But no, I mean, yeah, with Gio, he said he trained at shortstop in the offseason. People were taking his comments of like a more sort of like, if you own any Tyler Wade stock, and if you do, why? But if you do, like, people were like, oh, like maybe it's just a replacement for Tyler Wade. It's generally speaking, it's a bad idea to have like your backup shortstop be an everyday player. Like,
yeah, true.
It's just too much risk there. Urshela, if he plays more than 5 games at shortstop this year, I'd be genuinely shocked. Like,
yeah.
I think the Yankees are just doing it as a, If
just in case, break glass. Just if
Labor Torres and Tyler Wade get hurt in the same game, kind of deal. Okay. Like, but I don't.
He's think like there's the emergency any... catcher at shortstop. Yeah,
exactly. Gotcha. I don't think there's any viability there for Urshela at short. But if Glaber doesn't work at short, then we have to sort of question Gio Urshela's viability on the Yankees, right? Like, yeah. what happens there? Or Luke Voit's viability. I mean, that's a guy, Luke Voit. That guy can mash. You put him in any park and he'll mash, right? So we'll see. I mean, it's tough for Torres. I really want him to succeed because, A, he seems like a likable guy, and, B, obviously, 23 years old, he's immensely talented, right?
Yeah, immensely talented, super young. Like, there's a lot of development that can take place there. And I don't see him being a long-term shortstop either. So
no, I was, you know, when they moved him to second base, I was like, that makes sense. Like, you know, his range at short isn't great. His arm's definitely capable of playing the position, but his range, you know, and I'll go into that in the article, but the man can't move to the right very well.
Yeah. I think second base or third base is a great landing spot for a guy like Gleyber Torres.
I like the third base idea because, you know, if he can't if he can't move to his right too well,
he doesn't need to.
Limiting how far he can go right is like
a good thing.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, you said he's got the arm, so that's not the issue.
Yeah, it's not the arm. It's just the range.
Yeah, so that'd be something to keep an eye on. Another Yankee situation, I'll combine the dynamic duo, the new version of the Bash Brothers, whatever you want to call them, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. There's no doubting how talented they are offensively, how hard they go to baseball. The doubting part is how many games do they play? And, you know, it's just like this time, you know, last year, they look great shape. You know, there's pictures last spring training where they were like shirtless or wearing cutoff shirts and like flexing their muscles and everyone's all excited and then they go and get hurt. Right now, everyone's saying they look great. Like Judge took up yoga to help with his health and other things like that. Are you a believer? These are the guys like I just have such a hard time buying in.
It's tough. Judge's ADP is 49 right now.
Yep.
And that's right in that sweet spot where it's like, that's probably where he should be. But not enough people are going to think that's where he should be, where you could wait a bit and he could fall more because they're concerned that he's not going to play.
True.
You know, Giancarlo is even tougher because I saw somebody the other day said, and I think this is a pretty good comparison. People used to marvel at how Tony Gwynn would strike out less than 40 times a year. Yeah. Giancarlo hitting the ball 120 miles per hour every year and having the top exit velocity is the new Tony Gwynn strikes out less than 40 times a year. So nobody can do it like he can.
Nope.
And it's his ADP is 110. And that's, I think that's actually a little high because again, he's played what, like 38, 40 games in the last 2 years. It's concerning.
Yep.
Obviously when he's on the field, I mean, you're going to get a guy who could hit, you know, anywhere from 280 to 300, have an OBP of 370 to 400 and hit 40 to 50 home runs a year. Yep. He's not a guy where I'm like, you know, the new ball might really affect. No, that ball's getting sent out of every park every time he really connects with it. But again, is he going to play? But apparently, both him and Judge, they say, like, this is, I hate this, but this is the best they've ever felt. It's the best they've felt in a few years and everything. And, you know, you can, when you watch them play, they are moving around like a little bit better. They're a little bit faster, a little bit looser. But it's so tough.
It's tough, man.
I like, if you're telling me you're taking Aaron Judge in the 50s, I could understand it because in his like actual prime of talent, if he plays a full season, he's a top 10 guy. Like, there's just no question. He's a 40 home run, high average, high OBP, great slugging, lots of RBIs, lots of runs. Like, he fills up every category you could possibly want, right? Yep. Stanton, you know, the DH, I guess some leagues he might have multiple position variability, but I don't see why he didn't.
He didn't play the outfield.
He didn't play the outfield, but so, you know, the DH thing hurts. But yeah, Stanton's even tougher. Judge, if you're telling me you're taking in the 40, anywhere from like the 45th to 60th pick, I'm probably telling you that's a good. If you're telling me you're taking Stanton anything above 100, I'm telling you don't do that. Yeah. But if you're in the 120s, 130s, man, it's at that point it's hard. It's hard to pass up because it's just like, man, I could get 40 home runs out of this spot though, and
but you can't find very often back there.
So exactly, you can't. It's tough. I definitely, I don't envy people who are like still debating. You know, there are some people who are like, oh, I haven't drafted Judge and Giancarlo at all. And I get that. Like, that's perfectly understandable. But for me, the upside is just so high with those guys that I'm always considering it.
Yeah, Judge, I could see, because I wrote an article before the last season before COVID. We had a full season coming down the line. An ADP debate between Judge and Franmil Reyes, because they were going about 80 picks apart. But the reason I debated them is because you factor in, you know, X amount of games that Judge has missed in each season. Well, now his stat line is almost the same, if not less, than a normal season of Franmil Reyes. So it's interesting. But when doing that research, the production that Judge does when he does play is insane. Yeah, like, the crazy quality of his just overall offensive stats is just dumb. So if he can put a full season together, he's an MVP. Like, there's no question it. It's nuts.
In fantasy value, you know, if we talk about home runs and RBIs and everything, in 100 games, he usually puts up around 25 home runs to 60 to 70 RBI. That's crazy. Then in games, real, you know, if we go by, you know, Fangraphs WAR and Baseball Reference WAR, he's like a 4 or 5 win player in 100 games. That is also just crazy to think about. So Judge is much easier to, like, if you're telling me you're drafting Judge, a little bit riskier than Stanton, completely understandable. Stanton, if you're telling me you're avoiding him altogether, I get that.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It hurts so much.
It does. It's tough. It's tricky, because it's one of those you know can backfire on you at any time. So it's an interesting one, to say the least. Domingo Germán, off the field stuff aside, that's a whole nother story. Like, but he's been very good this spring. We know the Yankees are trying to figure out the back end of that rotation. He was a piece of it before all this bad stuff went down. It seems like he probably comes out of this with a spot in the rotation if he does it like one more time out there.
It's looking that way.
Are we going to thus buy into him in drafts?
I think you should. The thing that has stuck out to me in this spring training is he had a good fastball and a great curveball. Those were his primary pitches. His changeup was developing. That changeup has finished developing. That thing's nasty. It's a great pitch now. He's legitimate gone from a 2-pitch with 3-pitch upside to he's a 3-pitch pitcher with all plus pitches. He's now watching him pitch. It's just nasty. He can come at you with, he's got good command of the fastball, good command of the curveball, good command of the changeup, and all three of them are good pitches. All he can get swings and misses on all of them. He can get you to beat it in the ground with all of them. His ADP right now is 277. Understandably so. He didn't pitch last year and everything. There's good questions about the innings. Was he even going to make the rotation? That ADP is going to skyrocket. I'm thinking now if you're sitting in like the 170s and 180s, and he's not gone by then, then you got to take him, because he's getting that fifth spot, and he just looks so good in it. However one feels about him, and I completely understand because I feel that way too, but he's now turned into a three plus pitch pitcher, which makes him just so much more valuable. And his command is good. He's not walking guys either. Nope. That's the thing that has stuck out too, is great command. He's got that changeup has developed into a third pitch, and the Yankees are going to ride him. They're going to pitch him.
Yeah, no, it's very intriguing. I grabbed him in the Raz Slam here recently when all of a sudden I saw him pitch another good start. I'm like, I'm going to grab him before it gets too late, because this seems viable. And I was a Devi Garcia fan, and there's nowhere for him to go.
I still am.
Yeah, there's nowhere for him to go, which stinks. But yeah,
the worst. It's not even Domingo Germán pitching well. It's Lucas Liu. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Lugage. That guy is arguably taking the spot from Debbie, because he's been amazing for the Yankees. He's struck out like 60% of the hitters he's faced. Bonkers. That shouldn't be happening. But yeah, I told people going in that I would be drafting Debbie over Domingo Germán, because I thought Germán was just going to end up in the bullpen, because this stuff does translate pretty well to the bullpen and everything. I thought the Yankees were that confident in Debbie and everything, but Herman's just pitched too good. It's just his stuff's too good. Like, you can't pass.
Yep. It's tough. It's very tough. Another guy here, Max Scherzer. He's looked pretty, pretty good here in spring. I know it's one of your guys. Last season, he did Max things. Like, when he was on the mound, he was good. There were some questions with injuries from time to time, but he got it done. He's getting older. There's like a few more question marks than usual going into a season. How do you think he's like, how do you approach him going into 2021?
That's a good question. I saw some people were like keeping him out of their top tens, you know, dynasty, I get, but like single season top tens.
Yeah.
And I think there was this, Max Scherzer was still good last year. Like he was still a good pitcher last year. And the thing that was so interesting to me when I wrote that article was his command was noticeably worse than it ever was before. But again, it could have been the start and, you know, the stop and start, right? That could have affected him. Could have taken him a little while to get going. But in this, the velocity was still there. It didn't really tick down. The velocity is there again in spring. He hit 98 the other day. That's a good sign. The spin's still there. The stuff's still moving the same. There's no real signs of age. It's just, oh, he's 36. He had a worse season. It's finally coming because age catches everybody, which is true. It does. It will catch him eventually. But there's nothing really that points me to a sign of like he's going to have this massive regression. Yeah. I still say you should be taking him within your first top 10 pitchers because that stuff, the stuff is still good and it's still Max Scherzer. Until he goes out and struggles, we should give him the benefit of the doubt. He is one of the best pitchers of this generation. And again, it's not like the velocity's gone. It's one thing if the velocity's gone. No, it's still there. The stuff's still spinning. The stuff's still moving. His command has been better in the spring. And he leads, I believe, spring training in strikeouts right now. At least he did when I checked 2 days ago. I don't know if he still is today. You know, stats change every day. But so that's a good sign that, you know, this guy who everyone's like, yeah, you know, we should probably start fading him. No, like he's got to sit there and say, no, I still got it. Like, I'm still Max Scherzer.
Yeah, he's like last season, people saw the more home runs. He got hit around a little more from time to time, but he still had a 30%+ strikeout rate for the sixth straight season. Like he's doing, like he walked a few more. So, like I said, the command, the control, whatever you want to say, was a little off. I think one of the biggest things, I've said it with a few of the national pitchers, because Corbin, you know, the velocity's down, but he had some similar fates that Scherzer had. Doing DFS, I watch innings by innings a lot closer from time to time. And it seemed like Dave Martinez likes to leave his guys out there a little too long.
He does.
And I get it. I'd be scared to tell Max Scherzer you're coming out in the middle of the inning too. I get it because he looks at you and tells you no. But there's a point where you're the manager where you have to do these things because there was a lot of starts. I haven't looked like per se, but
there were
I remember a lot of starts where it's like, okay, they threw him out in the seventh, two walks and a home run, and all of a sudden his whole thing's gone. Yeah, it's like
there are a lot of outings where he got roughed up late where you're like, it's in like pitch 98.
Well, there were some where it was after 100. There's some after 100. It's like, okay, I know he's Max Scherzer, but let's just cool this. Right? You actually have a good bullpen right now. Why don't you go use that?
Yeah. I wrote an article about Tanner Rainey, who I thought was going to be their closer, but they signed Brad Hand, and then Tanner Rainey went.
Yeah, that disappointed me too.
I really like Tanner Rainey.
Yep, but, I'm with you.
Yeah, I was like, man, it's the seventh inning. Tanner Rainey's right there. Just go get him. Like, go signal to the pen. Go bring him out. Yeah, there were several, you know, I don't want to speak ill will of the guy because he was very nice. But there were several times where I was like, Dave, what are we doing here? Corbin's different because, again, the velocity decreased.
Yeah,
the stuff didn't move as well.
Definitely.
He was just getting hit around. Right? Mm-hmm. That's different. But with Scherzer, everything like peripheral-wise outside of the command was still the same.
Yep, 100%.
It just looked like Dave was leaving him in for too long. And, again, as you said, I get it. He's a very scary guy when he's out there on the mound.
I'm not messing with him either.
But, like, at some point.
Yeah, you got to look out for the team here and just be like, you know what, we'll talk about this later. it's the way it's going to go.
Yep.
Let's talk about a few more spring training standouts right now. Obviously, you said it earlier, and I say it all the time, you treat spring training with a grain of salt. But at the same time, there's some things we can kind of garner out of it and take a little positivity out of it or negativity. Depends on how you look at things. And one I wanted to mention is Joey Gallo. A rough season last year. Forgive me, pitcher list people. I forget who wrote the article for you guys, but did an amazing job breaking down the swing changes he made, the way pitchers approached him differently, and that's what kind of lowered his overall production. But when you deep dive into his production, like the StatCast metrics are still pretty good, like pretty good for Joey Gallo. So it's like a slight tweak. And he seems to, given, might be lesser pitching in spring training, but the dude's hitting 400. He's 8-for-20. He has 5 home runs. He has 7 extra base hits out of his 8 total hits. And another thing I love to see out of Joey Gallo, 6 strikeouts out of his 12 outs. That's fine. That's Joey Gallo. But 6 walks also. So his plate discipline is – like I almost like the 6 walks more than the 5 home runs personally. Like that gets me very excited to see. So are you buying in on Joey Gallo? Because before spring, before the start, like January, February drafts, it was still a mixed bag for a lot of people. But now they're seeing this, and it's like, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah, I'm all over Joey Gallo. All in. That's his ADP right now is sitting at 132. Take him way higher than that. Way, way higher than that. That guy was destined to break out. I don't care what happened in 2020. That dude, if he makes contact, it is getting sent everywhere. I mean, he just hits the ball. He's got not Giancarlo, because nobody is, but he's the next closest thing.
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, he just rockets the ball. So I'm all over Gallo. Take him 30 picks before his ADP, 40 picks before his ADP. I don't care. That's all fine to me. He is 100% worth it.
Yep. And I think he hits like 240 to 250. And if he does that, you're golden. It's when he hits like 200 or 210, you're kind of like, eh. But 240 to 250, you can live with that when the dude hits 45 to 50 home runs.
It's 240 to 250 with a 370, 380 on base percentage and a 500 slugging. And he's gonna hit second or third in that lineup. So he's going to have a ton of runs and a ton of RBI. Yep. And then when he gets traded to somewhere else, hopefully not Tampa Bay, because that would just be broken. But there are rumors of that, and that makes me mad.
That'd be interesting for sure.
He would destroy.
How many times does he hit the catwalk? That's all I want to know.
The better question is when he hits, goes into other AL East parks, is there any
single can you imagine him in Yankee Stadium for a four-game series or something?
He would destroy.
Actually, the fun stat, you know, like in San Francisco, they have the McCovey Cove, like, splash landings meter that goes. If Gallo goes and plays in Tampa, have a meter for how many times he hits the back wall in right field on the fly. Like, because it's only, like, so many feet of bleachers, and there's just that wall. Like, how many times does he just pepper the wall?
That's a good one. I'm all over Joey Gallo.
Yeah.
His ADP is way too low.
Joey Gallo in the AL East. You know, now I was talking about Camden. Like, there's just, that's fun. That's fun right there.
He would be really fun to watch in the AL East. Yep. It would be terrible for baseball if he goes to the AL East, just because if he goes to Tampa Bay, I should say, because he'll get dumped somewhere else in 2 years and complete the cycle. But God,
it'd be fun for a little while.
It would be fun for a little while.
Yeah. Let's talk about Jock Jams. Jock Peterson went and signed with the Chicago Cubs, which was kind of funny because, like, Schwarber goes to the Nats and they go and sign Peterson. And it's like, okay, it's that whole Spider-Man meme for a second there. But Jock's never really had the chance to hit lefties. And so far this spring, they're letting him face lefties. So he's facing everybody. And he's 12 for 24, hitting .500. He's got 5 home runs. He's got 4 walks even, which is great. So he looks awesome. It is spring training. Like, I don't expect Jock Peterson to hit even over 300, let alone 500. But are you liking what you're seeing? Are you buying in on this Jock Peterson? Because he's very cheap in drafts right now.
Yeah, I mean, his ADP is 281. So, yeah, at that price, I'm all over him. Like, I don't know how, like, many lefties he'll actually get to face. But at a 280 ADP, that's arguably one of the biggest steals in all of drafts. Is Jock Peterson that low?
Yeah, he's a pretty good one. But I will say one thing before you finish is he said he signed with the Cubs over other teams because they said he could face lefties.
Yeah, that part concerns me, actually. Yes. That's the part I was about to get to, was he's not this good against lefties.
No.
Like, no. Listen, despite what we might say about the platooning and everything, there's a reason that the Dodgers do it. There's also a reason that they're the smartest organization in baseball. Maybe outside of Tampa Bay. Maybe they are smarter than Tampa Bay. Who knows? They just beat them in the World Series. There's a reason that Jock Peterson didn't face lefties. Listen, if he could go out and hit lefties, I'll eat the crow. I'll chew the crow. I'll do whatever. Like, I will bite my tongue, eat my words. But he's got to prove it. Listen, if he hits 240, he's got 30 to 40 home run power. Everyone knows that. And he's going to get – this is the first year – he's probably going to be able to get 500 to 600 plate appearances because the Cubs, they don't really have anybody else to play, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they just don't. So he'll play, which is good for his 80, you know, good for his value. He's not this good against lefties. I think you're right. If he hits 240, 250, that'll be a monster year for Jock Peterson.
No doubt about it. Question for you here. You mentioned the ADP of Peterson. You know, Schwarber's going a good chunk higher than him. But again, similar players. Who do you think finishes with a better fantasy season?
Oh, that's mean. I don't like that question because
I'm a Schwarber guy too. Trust me, I love Schwarber.
I really like Schwarber too.
It's just one of those things. If just somehow Jock just slightly figures out lefty, just slightly, it gets interesting.
What's funny is they're also the same age.
Yeah, that's why they're the Spider-Man meme. Like they are literally.
I thought Schwarber was so much older. Maybe it's because like he was drafted out of college and Peterson's been.
Well, he looks like a rugged guy that's just been in. You know, Peterson's baby faced.
Yeah, they're both 28. Did not know that. Better fantasy season. I am partial to Schwarber because I've loved him for years. Mm-hmm. And I always thought he would end up with the Yankees just because that swing is
made like too much destined, sense
destined for that park. But they yep. Yankees, they don't seem to care about lefty righty as much as they used to. I'm gonna live bold and I'm gonna go with Jock because I think Schwarber is what he is. You know, he's a 230 to 240 guy. I don't think he's worse than that. I don't think he's better than that. His OBP is obviously very good because he's got great plate discipline and he'll hit he'll hit 30 home runs, the 30 to 35 home runs, right? I think that's what he is. I don't think he does better than that. Peterson's got a little bit more upside, so I'm gonna go with Peterson, but it's close. It's so they're, as you said, they're basically the same player.
Yep, it's very, very tricky. Bobby Dalbec is a guy that I just refuse to draft, but it's like harder and harder not to draft him now. Because I said it the other day, the baseball game has turned into a three true outcome sport. Bobby Dalbec is a two true outcome sport. Like it's a strikeout or a home run with him, and it's like the dude. They don't have his updated stats from today. He went one for one with a grand slam today. So basically, he's 9 for 27 now with 5 home runs. But he also has 13 strikeouts in his. Let's do the quick math there. That 18 outs, 13 of them are strikeouts. So. It's his swing and miss is just insane when you go and look at the stats. But if he's hitting all these home runs, it's hard to say no. I just haven't been able to do it. But are you believing in Bobby Dalbec being like this guy, or what do you expect from him?
I will give you my bias opinion because he went to U of A, and that is my school. I'm an alumni there, so I'm extremely biased and say buy Bobby Dalbec. My professional analyst position is do not buy Bobby Dalbec because the home runs stop coming at some point.
Yep.
And the swing and misses, strikeouts are not as important as they used to be, right? They don't define hitters. But with young players, they are still important because swing and miss is still very translatable. He's got pretty good discipline in terms of like he walks a decent amount. He's very similar to a young Joey Gallo. Like they're very similar in terms of their like approach and everything, and their metrics. But Dalbec's clearly got a ton of pop, way more than we anticipated. Like way more.
Yep.
And that's great. You know, obviously for my personal biases and everything, that's great. But I would not be drafting Bobby Dalbec. I'm concerned about the swing and miss, and it's not. It's you know. Like as you said, 13 of his 18 outs are strikeouts. It's not like he's also walking 12 to 15% of the time too. You know, it's not like we're talking about like an Aaron Judge or Joey Gallo, as we said, or, you know, other Reese Hoskins is another guy, right? It's not like that. He strikes out and then walks enough, but not to the rate of like, you're willing to live with the low average because the OBP is still pretty good with the power. Yes. There's concerns about the average being there.
It's tough. He has 4 walks this spring. So, yeah, that's my biggest thing. The average is going to be tough to come by. I could see him being, you know, very, very good. Very, very good. Or I could see him being like Adam Dunn before he retired. It's a weird spectrum that scares me.
So. If he had better plate discipline, I'm not talking about like an improvement in the strikeouts. If the strikeouts were the strikeouts, right? But he had more, if he had, let's say, 7 walks, right? Or something like that. I'd be a little bit like, more bullish and say, yeah, okay, he's more like Joey Gallo, so it's worth it. But no, it's not there, so it's harder for me to buy into it.
Yep, it's tricky, very tricky. Shohei Ohtani, health has always been a concern with him, but when he's healthy, we know how good he is, and he's showing it this spring. Just, you know, 4 home runs, one of them off some pitcher named Shane Bieber, and it was a bomb.
He's a moonshot too,
absolute bomb. He's 11 for 19 this spring hitting wise. Not to mention he's, you know, hitting triple digits on the radar gun. What are you doing with Shohei Ohtani right now in drafts? Because he's so good, but there's part of me is like, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, I mean, he's tough. He's really tough. His ADP is 172. I mean, it's obviously, like, if he were healthy, it wouldn't be 172. It'd be one, because you're not going to get 450 plate appearances with 25 home runs to 30 home runs power, and then 130 innings from the same guy, right? Like, he'd be going number one in every fantasy draft. But he's not healthy. He's never proven to do it over a full season. It's tough. He looks so good, though. I'm a big believer in that sample size is needed and everything in spring training, right? And this is a ridiculously small sample size. But he looks so in tune with his swing. The toe tap looks good. His mechanics on the mound look good. The stuff is moving. The velocity is there. And then the power is there at the plate. And it's just like, you're doing all the things I want you to do to make me believe, but I still don't believe because of your injury history. I think if you're willing to go with a late, a mid to late pick on Shohei Ohtani, I would do it. I think he's one of the, when we talk a lot about, like, risk averse and how risk averse are you. He's one of those guys where it doesn't really matter how risk averse you are. At the right value, you need to take him.
Yeah.
You need to do it. And his ADP is sort of that right value. Like, that's a good spot to be taking him.
Yeah, if you're in a daily league where you can use him at both positions, he becomes much more valuable. If it's a league where you have to decide if he's a hitter or a pitcher, that changes things. If it's a weekly league, it really changes things. So format dictates a lot of it. But, man, if we knew he was healthy and you had, like, a daily moves league, like you said, he's like the top pick. You just, like, yeah. he's that good. It's just, are we going to get that? That's a question. Last guy I want to ask about here is Bobby Witt Jr., the top pick for the Royals a couple years ago. Looks very, very good. I did not think he'd be this good already. I didn't think he'd have even a conversation about being up this year, but he's hitting everything and hitting it very, very hard and very, very far. I still don't think he starts out the season with a team, but what's your kind of expectations? Because some people are starting to draft him right now, which I think is an interesting decision.
I would not draft him.
No.
Because ultimately, what? Outside of the Mets going with Pete Alonso, when was the last time a team, like, had their top prospects start the year with them?
The Mariners only the White Sox when they sign them to a deal. That's the only time it happens. Yeah, that's the only time it happens, though. They got to sign them to a deal.
The Mariners might do it with Jared, Kalanick, just because
they have to. Like,
they have to. Yeah, but I would not be drafting Bobby Witt Jr. And that's not because of his play. That's just because of the way baseball works, right? He hasn't done anything to make me not want to draft him. He's done everything that makes me say, this guy is going to be a great baseball player. I already believed in him a lot when they drafted him. Like, Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be really good. That's a great pick. But it's baseball. It's still, like, this is where baseball and the way it operates matters. The likelihood he makes the team is still relatively low. If they announce, like, he's going to make the team on opening day, if you still haven't done your draft by then, weird. But on the waiver wires and stuff on the free agent markets, then go get him.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. But, like, don't draft him. I don't think it's worth it because he'll be there. Especially if you're doing 1 year stuff, like, he's gonna be there. People aren't gonna draft him.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you there. So it's gonna be interesting because I've seen people draft him, like I said, and he's good. I just expected it, like, another year from now. Maybe see him in September and then get a chance, but
you might see him in, like, if like he's absolutely mashing, you might see him in, like, June or July, right? Just if he's like on an absolute tear or something and they just can't deny it. But yeah, I agree. I thought he was a year away, maybe 2 years away coming into this.
Yeah.
Again, he was drafted.
Yeah, he hasn't even played past rookie ball yet. Like, he hasn't, like, it's tough. There's progressions.
Development is not linear. Yeah. So it's tough. I don't draft him, though. I would not be.
He's not Ken Griffey Jr., where he just goes straight to the bigs. It just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen like that anymore.
No.
Nor should. Right.
No, it shouldn't. There's something to be said about getting them at bats. So just don't cancel all the minor league teams, and we'll get to actually get these kids through some training. Like, let's talk about that. But that's, again, another podcast for another time. Let's get some listener questions here. Simon P., regular listener of the show, he has a couple questions. First, is Clark Schmidt worth drafting in a best ball format?
No, probably not. Granted, I don't even know if he's – I was all over Schmidt. I thought he was the Yankees' best prospect going into last year. This year, I still believed it. I think he's got just – the stuff is nasty. And the combination of his two-seamer with his slider and everything, I like that combo. And I'm not normally a guy who likes sinker two-seamers, but, you know, his moves a lot. So that makes me like it. But, you know, the elbow stuff, that's concerning. It's not Tommy John related, which is good. But, you know, he's not going to be ready to go in a minor league game until late May, early June, right? Then by then, you know, late May, early June, it's going to be another 2 or 3 weeks until he'd be ready to go in a big league game. And by then, just like you could get him on the free agent market if need be or anything. Yeah, don't draft him. I love the guy, but not worth it.
And then he has the joke. So should he buy Greg Bird for $1 in his 12-team NL only league?
I love Greg Bird. That swing makes me so depressed because it's so lovely to look at. But what the heck? Why not? He's gonna play, right? The Rockies don't have anybody better to play first base.
CJ Cron, be nice. CJ Cron's there. Be nice.
Oh, is he there? That's right. Yep. Oh man, the Rockies make so many moves that I can like from like that did nothing. So I completely forget about. Yeah, that they'll.
Yeah, for a buck, it's interesting.
Why not?
It'd be interesting. Another question he has here: why are the Marlins being dismissed as a bad team? Didn't they just make the playoffs in a short season, having one of the better and quickly improving rotations in the game, and boast a system brimming with talent? Lots of people sleeping on them. Do you like the Marlins this year?
I don't, but that's not because they're a bad team. I like them a lot. I think they're a good team. Like in 2 years, there's a real chance that they're the team that's going to be winning the NL East. Mm-hmm. That's how much I believe in them, especially with Sandy Alcantara really taking a turn, it looks like. And that's with Sixto hype and everything. Their offense leaves a lot to be desired. Definitely. And the good news is a lot of their prospects are offensive prospects and everything. And they're starting to turn into Cleveland where they're able to churn out pitching like it's nothing. But let's look at the rest of the division.
Yep.
The Nationals improved. No, how much did they improve? Don't know. But they improved.
Yeah.
The, you know, Atlanta is still a solid team, you know. They didn't upgrade their bullpen, which is concerning, but that lineup is still devastating, and I really like that rotation. The Mets obviously got immensely better. You know, they're arguably one of the favorites in that division, if not the favorite in that division. And the Phillies stayed roughly the same, right? The Marlins were lucky last year because they were carried by a really good pitching staff. Over a 162, that offense is not going to be able to do, you know, get away with what they did in a 60-game season. I don't think the Marlins are a bad team. I just think that their offense needs a lot of help. And over a full 162, we're not going to be able to wash away those issues as easily as we did in a 60-game season.
That's my tricky part, too. It's like a short season, you can run hot and make things happen. A lot of holes to do there. It makes it tough. Yeah, I'll be interesting. AJ at AJ Patel 8 says Jordan Montgomery. Yes.
As I said earlier, that's a guy who I went into the offseason. I said, everyone's sleeping on this guy. He's going to be good. And he's been fantastic this spring. He's pitched I think today he went 5 innings, didn't give up a hit, walked 1, struck out 4. That's what he's going to do. He's going to have a walk rate around 5 to 6%, strikeout rate in the 21 to 25%. And he's going to get you a lot of ground balls. And he's going to work 5 to 6 quality innings. And for the Yankees with their bullpen, that's all they need. That's a guy that you should be drafting.
Yep, big fan as well. At Rob Wedig asks, how do you stay patient during a draft and just let the draft come to you? He finds himself reaching for guys that he likes earlier than I probably have to. It's a tough question. It always is.
The biggest thing is, do you know who you're drafting against? If you know the people that you're drafting against, it's a lot easier. But if you're just in like a random league, the temptation is hard because you have no idea what they're thinking, right? So let's say, let's just go with the last example with Jordan Montgomery. His ADP, as I pull it up quickly here, because I don't remember it up, his ADP is 247. That's really low for me. Like, he should be going much higher than that. But if you're like all in on Jordan Montgomery and it's like pick 195, right? 50 picks in front of his ADP. It's hard to justify taking anybody 50 picks in front of their ADP, unless their name is Shohei Ohtani, which we already talked about, right? So if you're like starting to get nervous, right? Most people are probably going to wait. You could wait another 15 to 20 picks on a guy like Jordan Montgomery. But you don't want to wait too long because other people are going to notice, you know, there's been a lot of content about certain guys and everything. So if you're like really hankering for certain guys and you're within 20 picks either way of their ADP, I think you can go ahead and take them. You might be a little bullish sometimes. That's okay. But if you're really all in on your guys, get your guys. Don't be jumping the gun. Like I said, if you're taking a guy 50 picks before, you know, where he should be, it's a bad move, but you know, definitely, like if you're at pick 136 and you're this guy you really like is ADP 153, take him.
Yeah.
Take him. Because somebody else is probably thinking the same thing as you are.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is, don't go super, super early, but don't be afraid to go a round or two early. I've always said that if it's a guy you truly believe in, then he should be going higher than that. I've heard different people talk about it in different ways, but it kind of, right, there's no way to, I guess, teach you how to have feel in a draft because I don't always have feel in a draft. Like things happen, curveballs get thrown at you and you get kind of wacky and it gets goofy, but you just kind of stick to the guys you like, your list, whatever you want to call it. And it gets interesting, but you can definitely reach for your guys. It's one reason why I say sometimes I like drafting on the ends of the draft because it makes me have to go get my guys knowing I won't have like, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30 picks till I get to go again. So I have to go get them. And then I can kind of like, okay, well, I had to do it, so I feel better about it. And that's just one way to go about it. So there's really no rhyme or reason, Rob, but it's more of a like Max was saying, don't go like 50 picks early. But if you want to go, you know, 20-ish picks early or 25 picks early or whatever, there's definitely some viability to that.
Yeah, like the general thought process I have is get your guys.
Yep.
Don't be bullish, but like get your guys.
Exactly. At Beat Rick and Frank JB asks, Leody Tavares, stat line for the season.
Yeah, when he asked that, I was like, that's a random question. Tavares has a lot of speed, high defensive upside because of the speed. The hard hit rate and the exit velocity was kind of interesting. That stuck out to me when I did a quick glance at him. The plate discipline leaves a little bit to be lacking. Not a lot of power upside. You know, I think if he can turn into a 260 hitter, 270 hitter who can steal 20 to 30 bags, right, then he, you know, he's immensely valuable. I don't know if he can do that. I don't know how good his hit tool really is, but the hard hit rate and the exit velocity make me second guess that a little bit. But if I had to guess, he's probably somewhere in the 245 to, you know, 245, 320, 410 range.
Yeah, that's what makes sense right now. Like, he's supposed to lead off for the Rangers, which would lead to a lot of stolen bases and run scored possibilities, which would be great. But he's having he's having a bad spring also. So they're debating moving him down the order to start the year, and that just kind of takes more value away from him. In a perfect world, he's got, like, you know, 12-ish home run power. Like you said, 25-plus, 30-plus stolen bases in a perfect world. But it's tricky right now because his production this spring looks like it might hold him back a little bit.
And so, it wasn't there last year either.
No. And he's a young prospect, so it could develop, but he hasn't shown it yet. It's been tough.
If you're taking him as like your sort of like prospect breakout, I would look into other guys. Yeah, that would be my advice.
Basically, when he's drafted, it's more your desperation, I want stolen bases guy. That's what it turns into.
If you're looking at Mateen and you're sort of realizing that you got a lot of, you know, all of a sudden your catcher is Yasmani Grandal, your first baseman is Rhys Hoskins, your second baseman is DJ LeMahieu, your third baseman is Gio Urshela, and you're like, man, I don't got a lot of speed on my roster. Yeah. That's the kind of guy you take.
Pretty much. That's how it's been going so far. At Dan Mullet asks, join the league that is OPS instead of average. Who gets a bump and who is downgraded using OPS?
Gets a bump is obviously Joey Gallo a massive bump.
Massive bump
if he goes up. Batting average hit. Yeah. Batting average hit. Tim Anderson takes a bit of a hit.
Yep.
Because he don't walk. that man is allergic to walks. And that hurts. And you know, his power is, you know, 15 to 20 home runs, which is good. But you know, if you're in an OPS league, there's so many other shortstops you can get that are just so much more valuable. He's a great fantasy shortstop because he hits, presumably, if he does it again, you know, there's still some, you know, not entirely sure he's actually that good of a contact guy, but we'll see. I think he is, but you know, I understand why people are not sure. But he's, you know, a 310 hitter who has an OPS around, you know, 830, 840 because he walks. I think in 2019, he had like 8 walks on the year. That's bad.
Very bad.
And so in an OPS league, he takes a large tumble.
Yeah. No, basically the way I would tell him to go look at it, you can obviously just go look up OPS, but go search guys that just OBP and you'll see a big difference. Like at each position, you know, like Rhys Hoskins, Carlos Santana, all of a sudden get massive boosts at first base. You can do that position by position and you'll see that all of a sudden some positions might be deeper. Like catcher, for instance, there's a lot of like 320, 330 OBP guys out there at catcher that have horrible batting averages. Omar Narváez has a 330 to 340 OBP every year. I know we're talking OPS, but like it's a whole different world of how you want to draft guys, something to think about. As I go that realm, you can get a lot more value at certain positions that you didn't have before.
Kevin Biggio also
becomes. Yep, now he becomes relevant. Now, I will not touch him in his ADP in a regular average league, but in OPP, you got a discussion.
Yep.
Last question came in while we were recording. Sean at Sean9498 says, just say, I love Danilson Lamet. He'll know what it means.
Yes, I love Danilson Lamet. Sean is one of the – so when I was working on Sports Info Solutions, I watched Danilson Lamet's first start, and I was completely flabbergasted by the fact the catcher was putting down a 2-sign and then a 3-sign, but it looked like the same pitch. And then not even 2 weeks later, Ben Clemens wrote an article on Fangraphs about how Danilson Lamet throws two different sliders. And I was like, aha, I was right. He does throw two different sliders. And then I was all over Danilson Lamet. I kept telling people, I was like, you need to draft this guy. He throws 98. His slider is disgusting. I think it will be the most singular, most valuable pitch in baseball in 2020. I was right. If you go by Baseball Savant's run value metric, it was the most valuable pitch in baseball. Negative 19 runs. It led baseball last year.
Wow.
The problem is he throws it a lot.
Yep.
Which leads to, he already had Tommy John. He apparently is doing okay. They're working him back slow. He's throwing sliders. Don't draft him high.
No.
Maybe don't draft him at all. But there's a possibility he'll start the year probably on the IL, I would assume. If he doesn't, he's not gonna be anything more than 2 to 3 innings at a time. But I'd be shocked if he starts the team on the roster and doesn't have Tommy John. But it hurts because I love the guy. I was all over him. His stuff is obviously disgusting. Just he throws a slider a lot, and he throws it hard, and that those guys get Tommy John.
I see you brought it all back for me there because there's some people I know, like Coaching Ish, Doug Ishikawa, who is in love with Danilson Lamet, and I've talked to him on his show, and I said, you gotta calm down because he's still all in this year. And I'm like, A, his arm's barely hanging on, so let's talk about that for a second. And B, his other pitches are great. I'd love to see a third pitch because then obviously he's not using his slider as much, and then I think it makes the slider even more dangerous.
The changeup needs to develop.
Yeah, if he can do that, I will be all in on Danilson Lamet. Like, go fix his arm, and go get a third pitch. Then we can have I'm joining the party.
Yeah, I mean, he's a two pitch pitcher, and he was one of the best pitchers in baseball last year. If he develops a third pitch, the ceiling is Cy Young.
100% agree. Like, it's terrifying.
He has an immense ceiling. Problem is, got to figure out if he's healthy, and he's got to develop the third pitch. Because if he's healthy and has the third pitch, we're going to be – that San Diego rotation gets immensely better.
Which is hard to believe that it can get better.
Yeah, no.
Bananas already. Yeah. But on that note, on Danilson Lamet love time, we're going to wrap things up. Go ahead and plug where everyone can find you, what you got coming up, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so it's at GreenfieldMax18 on Twitter. Look out for Mike Labertore's article on Friday where I discuss more so his future at shortstop and his offensive profile. We do go over the defense. I'm sorry, Yankee fans. It's not going to be pretty. But that's what I got coming out. The season is coming up soon, which means I can stop scraping for content, figuring out what to say. But that's follow my stuff at PitcherList. Just follow the wonderful people at PitcherList, to be honest. Nick Pollock, Alex Fast, all of them wonderful people. So happy to be a part of that community. So happy to be part of the fantasy baseball community. Sometimes people listen to what I have to say. I'm going to be wrong a lot. I'm going to just let you know that now. But like, I'll hit occasionally, so hopefully that matters.
We all will be wrong a lot. That's just how it goes. I can't remember. Someone said it best. Like, if we're right 30 to 35% of the time, we're like Ichiro. So, like, that should be pretty good, right? So, I'm with you there. Everybody go check out Max's stuff over at PitcherList. Great, as he mentioned, great people, great site. Nick and Alex have become quite nice friends of mine. So, I love everything they got going on over there. And, Max, thanks for joining me, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. A lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do it again sometime. But everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 353 with Max Greenfield of PitcherList. Catch you guys later.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.